Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. The first Friday of every month, we start out with a two-minute segment of Alfie's Vegan Parenting Tips.
This is Alfie's Vegan Parenting Tip number 7, more praise of mushrooms. I recently learned that mushrooms are potent germ fighters, specifically viruses. You know, the kind of sick that you just have to wait out, which can be a bit heartbreaking and exhausting as a parent. I make what I call mushroom broth or mushroom tea, where I soak a dried edible mushroom in hot water, and you can add what you like tamari, garlic, and ginger, which are also beneficial germ fighters, and a splash of apple cider vinegar. My kids love this. They finish their mug and ask for more. That was Alfie's Vegan Parenting Tip, but remember, there's more beneath the surface.
Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow. I'm very honored and happy that joining us is Keith Berger from Boca Raton, Florida. Keith is one of the most powerful abolitionist vegan educators in the United States. Thank you, Keith, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene. I'm very honored to have the opportunity to speak with you. We've actually just slightly changed the name of our group. It was South Florida Vegan Support Group. Now it's South Florida Vegan Support and Education Group. So I think it's just going to be South Florida Vegan Education Group, but we're kind of moving to that.
And are you the founder of it?
Yeah, my girlfriend Elena Brodskaya and I are the founders. Funny that I am vegan. I live in Boca Raton and my last name is Berger, so I am truly a vegan Boca Berger.
Okay.
It's one of the ironies of my life, Marlene.
I would love to hear about your experience as the instant vegan.
Before I became vegan, I was the quintessential person who made fun of vegans. I made fun of vegetarians. I made fun of vegans. I would make arguments counter to the vegan and vegetarian arguments that I'd heard. I would make arguments that when I was told that veal calves were treated cruelly, that they were kept in crates where they couldn't turn around, they suffered horribly, they didn't see their mothers, they were given substandard diets and eventually killed to become veal, I would counter with some crazy argument that I came up with, which was, well, if this is the only experience that calf has ever had, and they've never had a pleasurable experience, then they have no frame of reference for what might be better. So they're not actually suffering. These are the mindset that I had, or the mindset that I created for myself, which I really think was just a defense against looking at what was right in front of me, which was that animals were treated horribly for my convenience and my pleasure. When I think back on it, I think, you know, I'm reserving my right to take the rights of others is really what I was doing. My right to eat fish negates the right of a fish to be alive. My right to eat eggs negates the right of an egg-laying hen to her own reproductive system. So really, again, I was just living in a delusional mindset, I suppose. But one that I was brought up in American culture, eating a standard American diet. And I was opening a package of roast beef one day, and then the juice, quote-unquote, ran down my hand, and I looked at it, and I had this moment where I thought, that's not juice, that's blood. And my next thought was, I was a little repulsed, and my next thought was, would I drink a glass of blood? And the answer was no.
Yeah, no more vampire diet.
But I had somebody ask me one day if I was vegetarian. I was eating a salad somewhere, and they're like, are you vegetarian? I said, no, not one of those. People are crazy. Marlene, I never thought I would be the person who looked at a parent putting a chicken wing in their child's mouth and thinking you're an irresponsible parent. You're supposed to protect your child. Never thought I would have thoughts like that. Never. Even when I went vegetarian, I'm like, well, I'm vegetarian, but it's about me. I don't care about all that other stuff. I love animals, but they're here for us. So, yeah. Oh, I hate that I thought that way. I really do. But yeah. It helps me. It helps me kind of relate to people who are still in that place because I know what it's like.
Yes, I know.
I was vegetarian for a couple of months purely for my own selfish reasons. My cousin, who was vegan at the time, and his fiance were visiting from New York, and they said, we'd like you to come over, and we're going to cook you a nice vegan meal, and we're going to have you watch a documentary with us. And I remember saying before I went there, this is back in 2004, I remember saying to him, you know, I'm not drinking your vegan Kool-Aid, okay? I'm going to come there. I don't know, whatever you tell me, whatever you show me doesn't matter, because vegans are crazy. They're extreme. So, you know, I had this preconceived notion. I said, I'm not drinking your Kool-Aid. And I went over to the house and made me a great meal. And they sat me down and watched a video called Peaceable Kingdom. And by the end of 70 minutes of watching this documentary, I had cried twice. And I just sat muttering to myself, saying, I never knew. I never knew. What I saw in the video could only be described in my own mind as slavery. I described it as Schindler's List for animals. And there was enough footage for me to see what looked like, they looked like concentration camps. It looked like a concentration camp, a prison, and all of the footage I'd seen of, you know, what had happened in the 1930s and 40s in Germany to the people who, you know, the victims of genocide and the Holocaust, that's what I was seeing happen to animals. And I came away with a very clear thought, and that thought was, if I wouldn't enslave humans, why would I enslave other individuals? And I knew by the end of 70 minutes I could not live that way anymore. I could not be complicit in a worldwide system of animal slavery, exploitation, abuse, and murder that I had been hidden from me, that I really didn't see, or I made myself not see. I just couldn't do it anymore. So that was it for me reserving my right to eat any animals. And the next morning I went to the mall and I searched around for non-leather belts, because I thought, if I'm not eating anybody, I'm not wearing anybody, and I'm certainly not using anybody for any other convenience. I tell you, Marlene, it took me so long to find a non-leather black belt. I thought I was going to have to take jujitsu for 2 years just to get one. That's pretty much the story. I really believe in the abolitionist approach to animal rights and to veganism, which is to educate people straight on and honestly about veganism as the moral baseline for our treatment of individuals of other species. And personally, my feeling is that if the meat, dairy, and other animal agriculture industries work from a position of dishonesty and deception to keep people in the dark about what's going on with animals, then it behooves the people on the other side, people who are wanting the world to go vegan, to be as honest and straightforward. We showed this film to some people the other night. We hosted a vegan movie night.
And on the Peaceable Kingdom, was it the newest version, which is Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, or the original one?
The one that I saw and the one we showed the other night was the original one.
What I liked that was included in the first film that is not included in the second. So the first, Peaceable Kingdom, has that beautiful song in there.
Oh, the one about falling out of my family tree?
It's the song that was made by the former slave ship owner, and then he had a transformation.
Yeah, no, that's the Amazing Grace.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a powerful part in the film. And I think it made the slavery connection a couple of times in the film, which either brought me to that conclusion or just reinforced what I was already thinking. I don't know which came first, but it had all the elements that I needed, because I was never going to go that direction. An hour before I watched it, I was standing on a soapbox talking about how I'm not going that way. So this knocked me off my soapbox.
That is quite the story of the instant vegan. Thank you.
We, as you mentioned at the beginning, my girlfriend Elena Brodskaya, with whom I co-founded the South Florida Vegan Support and Education Group, she went online and had bumper stickers made for each of our cars that has the howdoigovegan.com website on them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Keith and Elena.
You're welcome on behalf of both of us.
Are you familiar with the veterinarian in Florida who has the nonprofit Take Your Blinders Off? And he has a truck where he drives around with the filming of what's happening to animals in animal agriculture, which I want to reiterate that this is animal agriculture, including the small organic family farms, that it's not just about factory farming. It's about, as you've said, Keith, enslaving animals and doing to them what we wouldn't want done to ourselves or our children. And so have you heard of him?
I have. I don't remember his name. I had heard about him, and then I had, somehow or another, I ended up with a bumper sticker on my car. It's funny that you mentioned Take Your Blinders Off, that website. I didn't know where I got this sticker. I just bought it someplace and I put it on my car. I didn't realize the two were connected, because I knew there was a veterinarian, and I think he's around, he may be in the Orlando area. We've actually seen his truck somewhere. We went to see Paul McCartney in concert once, and I think his truck was parked outside. As a sidebar, I'm still waiting for Sir Paul to go vegan after all these thousand years that he's been vegetarian. I can't for the life of me understand why he's holding back, but that's a story for another day. But we had heard about that gentleman.
It's Dr. Randall Cannon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I give him a lot of credit, and especially coming from the veterinary world, where, again, it comes down to exclusion, wearing them or eating them, etc. So I really give him a lot of credit for being courageous in the veterinary world. And for you, too, I really appreciate your activism. And what has inspired you to not only be vegan, but to be a vegan activist?
Just to talk a little bit about the veterinarian point, if I might. I have a very good friend who's a veterinarian. He's one of the most esteemed veterinarians in Florida, I think, in the whole state. It's interesting. He's given me some insight into the cruelties that veterinarians sometimes have to visit on animals during their education. But it is, I think it's kind of what you said. It's about compartmentalizing. I'll help 14 dogs, 6 cats, a rabbit, and a bird on a Thursday, and then I'm going out to Roadhouse later on. You know, it's part and parcel with just the way that humans generally compartmentalize and engage in speciesism, which once I saw that word, I didn't realize what that was. It's if racism is about race and sexism is about sex, speciesism is an unfair bias toward one's own species to the detriment of another species. So my mom works for a veterinarian. She's been working for a vet for close to 20 years. She is an animal rescue person. She's done just her own rescues throughout my life living with her, and she also has worked with and continues to work with rescue organizations. But mom never wanted to really hear anything about going vegan, and then she called me up, I think it was in December of this past year, and she said to me, I stopped eating four-legged animals, just wanted you to know. And I said, okay, what about the two-legged ones and the flying ones and the swimmy ones? What about those? And she didn't really have an answer for that. And a few days later, she called me and she said, chickens that lay eggs, they treat them nicely, right? And I said, do you have 5 minutes? And after about 3 minutes, she said, okay, I'm not eating eggs anymore. So she was done. And on January 1st of this year, my mom, at 70 years old, very proudly went vegan.
Oh, congratulations, Keith's mom. Awesome.
Thank you. That's Joni. She does, she'll post vegan information on Facebook. She didn't cook for me for 10 years, Marlene. I went vegan in 2004. Till 2014, she said, I don't know what to cook for you. And I said, just leave out the dead animal and animal parts. Now, she sends us digital food all the time. So she texts me pictures of what she made. She says, I can veganize anything.
Wow, that's a great story.
The night that I went vegan and the following day, I was out of my mind with the desire, the compulsion, and the drive to help. I saw a million things wrong in the world, and I wanted to fix all of them, and I didn't know where to start. I went online, I started Googling all over the place, you know, how do I help? I started working with a local animal rights organization. I started holding signs at protests. I started organizing protests and demonstrations. That's actually how Elena and I met. We met when we were both working on lobster advocacy. I went into a grocery store and saw the lobster tank and thought to myself, you know, if that was a basket of kittens and they were selling kittens to people who were going to go home and kill them in the microwave, people would burn the store down in protest. But because they're lobsters and they're not cute and cuddly and they don't make squeaky sounds, you can take them home and throw them in a pot of boiling water. We don't care. So I started wanting to do lobster advocacy, and that's actually how Elena and I met. So what made me want to be an activist was I see an amazing amount of injustice in the world, and I wanted to be a part of bringing that to an end. What happened to me for the first 10 years, really, of my vegan life is I got sucked into what I think today is a black hole of animal welfare work. So my vegan activism has changed, and it's changed to the abolitionist approach, which is to do creative, nonviolent vegan activism, vegan education rather, and to let people know that this is how you can fix this. It's a paradigm shift that's needed to get people to understand that it's just simply wrong to use animals. If you use the human slavery concept as a metaphor, you know, we wouldn't have said, use a smaller whip, beat them with a smaller stick, let's have slavery-free Mondays, but you can still enslave people 6 days a week. What people worked for from an abolitionist point of view back then was, slavery is wrong, it needs to stop. So rather than trying to put out 100 million little fires that keep popping up every time you put the last one out and another one comes up, start from the heart of the problem. I think it was Henry David Thoreau who said, for every 100 striking at the branches of evil, one is striking at the root. So if we use that metaphor, we have this horribly diseased tree of animal exploitation, then pruning the branches back doesn't help. You have to go to the root. So we have to go to the root and dig that out. That's the place. there's a wonderful blog online. It's called There's an Elephant in the Room. One of those posts likens it to water flowing through a sieve. If all of the problems of animal exploitation are the holes in the sieve, you can keep blocking up one hole in the sieve and another hole and another hole, but the water will still find a way around and through and over. What veganism seeks to do is turn off the tap, go to the source, turn off the tap, or you don't have to fix holes in the sieve because there's no more water running through it. So that's a better metaphor than I've ever come up with.
That's great, Keith, and I agree with you 100% on your philosophy and your action for the abolitionist approach. It's important and it makes sense.
Thank you.
I really like your thoughts and your words and the way you express yourself, and I'm so grateful that you're alive on Earth and doing this compassionate, noble work. And what was your tabling event this morning?
The city that we live in, Boca Raton, Florida, I don't think they're very progressively minded, and there's a lot of bureaucracy. So we had to contact the city itself and ask them, where can we table? Where can we do education? We're not a for-profit organization. We're not selling anything. We're not trying to make any money. All we're trying to do is give people information. So we were told that in our city, in the whole city, there's one park, one tiny little park that is designated as, they called it a First Amendment area. So it's the free speech area. So there's a free speech area that's about an acre. And we thought, well, that's interesting. You should be able to just say what you want anywhere. I'm pretty sure the First Amendment encompasses the entire country. But, you know, no, in your town, it's from this tree to that tree. So we went through the process with them, and we got ourselves a permit to just go out and table in a little place called Sanborn Square. Well, let me back that up and say that South Florida is, I lived in upstate New York for 10 years. I lived in New York City for 12 years before that. So I know what foot traffic is like. I know when people walk. South Florida, nobody walks. There's no foot traffic. So we're really on an island with cars passing by. There's really nobody's going to stop. But on Saturday mornings, there's a free ordination-based yoga class that meets outside in the park.
It's time to take a break. We're joined by Keith Berger, co-founder of South Florida Vegan Support and Education Group. Keith is sharing information about the most recent tabling event in Boca Raton, Florida. And after the break, he'll be giving more details about vegan activism, health, and the abolitionist approach to creating a safe, healthy world for all.
You're listening to Community Radio, WCUW Worcester, 91.3 FM, online at wcuw.org.
Hi, this is Stephen Blake. Tune in on Mondays from 5 to 7 to catch The Drive with moi.
Welcome back to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Miley Narrow. We are joined by abolitionist, vegan educator, Keith Berger, via Skype in Boca Raton, Florida. Thank you, Keith, for continuing your story about the tabling event in Boca Raton.
So there were about 60 or 70 people there, and we've taken that yoga class many times. So we knew that before and after, they got to walk around. So we set up the table. We have brochures from the abolitionist approach. We have brochures from the International Vegan Organization, IVA, which I believe is actually based in, one of the bases is Boston, and the other, I think, is Vancouver. And we set up outside with a nice little tablecloth on a table and some information for people about animal rights and veganism. There's no farm that doesn't visit cruelty on its captives. So it's not long ago that I was signing petitions for bigger battery cages and better stunning at the slaughterhouse. Better stunning? How about we teach people that it's wrong to kill these animals in the first place? Not that we do it better, not that we do it gentler, more kindly, because humane slaughter is crazy. It's an oxymoron. You can't do it. And when people say cage-free this and grass-fed that and humanely raised this, I always ask them, I say, you know, what's the retirement plan for the free-range chicken? The retirement plan involves a very sharp blade across the neck. I said once, and someone put an abolitionist group online, they're called Grumpy Old Vegans, and they're just these two wonderful people in Ireland. And I had made a comment once, and they turned it into a poster, and essentially it says that every argument against veganism is an argument in favor of bullying, theft, torture, abuse, and murder. And then the question is, why would any rational person argue in favor of these things? So there are no valid arguments and no valid reasons that you can put against veganism. They're only excuses.
Another thing that I thought of that was inspired by you is when you were thinking, what can I do to help? And that there's so many problems in the world. And in deep veganism, the philosophy is that it is humanity's collective violence, that we're all in this together towards animals for research, for our food practices, is the root cause of all the human problems, all of them, because it's the boomerang effect. What we do to others is going to come back to us.
Absolutely. And if you extend it out to animals, which is where this is happening, it's all their moments of terror and all their moments of pain and all their moments of anguish. It's all trapped in their bodies. If we're eating that, then we're absorbing that on a molecular level. That can't be healthy. So we look at all of the maladies that affect humanity, cancer, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, all of the things that we know are so inextricably linked to the consumption of products of animal exploitation. There's no doubt that that's what's happening. So if we're taking in all of that dis-ease, then how is it possible that we wouldn't act out in our own disease? So, you know, the idea that we visit violence upon other individuals on this planet that aren't human, it leads very directly to how we can do the same thing to humans. If we're treating the most vulnerable, the weakest, and those most easy to exploit in horrific ways, then we're going to extend that outward. Living vegan is about living in the most peaceful life a person can probably lead. We were thinking today about what kind of sign we might want to put up when we do tabling. And I thought of, you know, there are some kind of religiously themed ones that I've seen, and I just had a thought about, you know, tweaking one of them to say, no vegan, like N-O, vegan, ? And then underneath say, no peace. And then no vegan, like K-N-O-W. And then, you know, or actually live vegan, and then it would be live peace. Really, because we were at a yoga event, I thought, no vegan, no ahimsa.
Yes.
Live vegan, live ahimsa. You know, we see the hypocrisy in so many facets of society, and we do attend yoga classes. 99% of the yogis that we know, 99% of the yoginis that we know, 99% of the yoga instructors that we know are not vegan, and make all these rationalizations. We were taking classes about the sutras, and the sutras very specifically, these are the underpinnings of yoga philosophically, and they very clearly talk about doing no harm, doing no harm. There's no asterisk. It's like thou shalt not kill. It doesn't have an asterisk that says, except when you're hungry. But to get that point across, we have talked to some yoga practitioners and said, well, you know, if you're really practicing ahimsa, which is this philosophy of doing no harm, then you would need to be vegan. Well, I honor the animal's sacrifice. I love that one. That's the most amazing rationalization. If a cow comes and knocks on my door, Marlene, and comes in with a knife held in her hoof and hands it to me and in English says to me, please stab me in the neck and eat me, I'm here for you, I'm sacrificing myself, that's a sacrifice. But to forcibly impregnate, forcibly breed, manipulate and mutilate, enslave and kill these individuals, there's no sacrifice there. Actually, there is. Let me rephrase that. There is a sacrifice there. It's our sacrifice. We're sacrificing our morals. We're sacrificing our ethics. We're sacrificing our humanity.
Keith, I love your words, and I really am happy that you're sharing your insight and your knowledge. Is there any tips that you have for those who say, yes, I want to be like Keith, and I want to be an instant vegan, so what do I eat?
It's funny. I have people ask me who aren't vegan. They're like, well, where do you get your protein thing? I usually say to them, we don't eat protein. We eat plants that contain amino acids, and then my body builds protein out of the building blocks of protein, which are amino acids. If I were eating animal products, I'd be eating the fully formed proteins that those animals had to make, and then my body would have to break it all back down and then build it all back up. So I'm doing double work. I spoke with a personal trainer about that one day while doing some outdoor advocacy, and he was stunned. He never heard anything like that before. I eat fruit and vegetables, nuts, legumes, which doesn't sound that palatable. I would have been like, oh, that sounds kind of boring, but it's not. There are vegan restaurants that are popping up all over the place, thank God. I don't take supplements. Now and then, if I think of it and remember, I have a bottle of sublingual B12 tablets I keep in my desk drawer at work. You know, what do we eat? We eat everything that isn't cruel. We eat everything that doesn't involve somebody having to suffer or die. And my palate changed. The things I used to crave my mom's breaded pork chops and skirt steak. Those were my favorite foods on the planet. They were so yummy, and when I ate them, it was like eating, it's like eating drugs. You know, you eat it and all of the endorphins just start popping in the brain, and, you know, and every, all the feel-good chemicals start happening up there. Now, I'll crave broccoli. It's weird. I'll crave arugula. Like, oh, I need some arugula. I really want arugula. Our taste buds change, our sensibilities change, and our lives change. The best and most delicious meals I've ever had in my life have been vegan meals. I'm not going to relapse back into behaviors that involve animal exploitation. I've been thinking for a long time. I've worked in substance abuse treatment for the last 21 years, and I've been vegan for 11 of those 21. And I see such correlations between the way alcoholics and addicts, well, it's all addiction, really, but those addicted to alcohol and other drugs, they will defend their addictions with the same denial and defense mechanisms that non-vegans will use to defend their eating of animal products. They'll use the same rationalizations and justifications and minimizations and deflection and transference and blame and diversion. They'll use all the same things that a person would use to tell you why it's not so bad that he shoots heroin. It's amazing. And we get a little, and you want more. It sets up the phenomenon of craving, just as it does for an alcoholic who drinks a little bit of alcohol. And then someone addicted to other drugs uses a little bit of their drug of choice. It sets up the craving again. And I think that when people are using products of animal exploitation, I think the same things are damaged.
Keith, we're coming to an end to the interview today, and I really appreciate you sharing all your knowledge and insights. Are there any contacts that you can leave with our listeners? And do you have any final messages?
Are you familiar with butterflies, cats?
Yes. I know that Butterflies is a member of the vegan eco-village called Gentle World in New Zealand and Hawaii.
Okay. When I first went vegan and I didn't know anybody in the area, she lives down here half the year. And I ended up at her house for a vegan meetup thing that she put on. And so that's where I started meeting a bunch of friends. That's actually where I met the friend who introduced me to Elena. So we're actually meeting with Butterflies tomorrow. She published the 125 vegan essays book this past year, and I'm actually in there. So oddly enough, I'm the first essay. Glad to be involved, and glad you are too. Anyone who's interested in furthering their education about veganism, and especially about veganism as the moral baseline, I would direct to abolitionistapproach.com, to howdoigovegan.com. And they want to come and say hello on our Facebook page. It's South Florida Vegan Support and Education Group, which is really facebook.com/vegan support group. The idea of starting a vegan support group was for people like me who, when I went vegan, there was no one to talk to about it. I had no one to tell me what to do, how to do it, where to go, where to eat. My family didn't want to talk about it. People were making fun of me, all that sort of stuff. So if they want to come say hi on our site, then they certainly can. And I would suggest the International Vegan Association, IVA. We just finished doing a reading group with them, which was extraordinary. So I would certainly direct people in that direction, and really away from working with and supporting the large donation-based animal charities, because I really think that they're taking this movement in a tremendously wrong direction. You know, while people are taking baby steps toward going vegan, billions of babies are suffering and dying. And so that leaves us complicit in that. For me, abolitionism is the way to go, and I would encourage people to take a look at that and see if it doesn't make a whole lot more sense than the welfarist approach.
Thank you, Keith, and thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene. I appreciate the time, and also I just wanted to say thank you to your listeners.
Thank you again, Keith. It's really
You're
great,
welcome,
and
Marlene.
I really honor both you and Elena. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. We have been very fortunate to be joined by Keith Berger from Boca Raton, Florida. Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.